dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One of the features of Secure Freedom Radio, for which I have been extremely proud over, well, most of 10 years that we've been doing this program, has been a weekly visit with one of the most knowledgeable, thoughtful, and influential investigative journalists of our time. His name is Bill Gertz. These days, he's senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon, and he writes a prize-winning column at the Washington Times called Inside the Ring. He is also the author, I believe it's 9 books now, to his credit, including the one we're going to talk with him about for this full hour. And I couldn't be more pleased that we'll have the time to drill down on what he calls Deceiving the Sky, Inside China's Drive for Global Supremacy. It's kind of a sequel and an update to a book that he wrote, 18 or 19 years ago, entitled The China Threat. And in that book and in several of the ones that he's written in between, all of them bestsellers, he has touched on the nature of what is going on in communist China and why, and what it means for us now and the rest of the free world, but also what it portends for the future. And it is a thrill to be able to welcome him back to both congratulate him on this new book and to visit with him about its contents. Bill Gertz, thank you so much for taking the time. Good to have you back.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the show.
Bill, I gave a little bit of biographical information there, but tell us a little bit more about how you came to work on this particular beat of national security. You've done it for decades and have contributed immensely with stories you've broken, with issues that you've helped elevate. What's your background and how did you get into this racket?
Well, I've been reporting for the Washington Times since 1985, and that was really kind of the beginning point. And I remember in the late 80s going to the Pentagon and for a background briefing. Back then, the Pentagon was much more forthcoming with reporters than it is today. They don't do very much to help reporters at all today. But they gave me a briefing on the Chinese military. And at the end of the briefing, Colonel came in and said, the general would like to see you. The general was the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. And we sat down in a conference room and at the end of the table, and the general said to me, Bill, you know, China's not a threat. And I was fairly surprised, but my first response was, well, why do you think that? And his answer was essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, because they've told us they're not a threat. And so I realized at that point that we have a serious, serious problem within not just our policy sections of government, but within the intelligence community. When the top military intelligence official has been deceived into believing that China is not a threat. As things would unfold over the next several years, it came to pass that the reason that general said that was because of the people who were working for him, one of whom turned out to be a Chinese spy. This is the person of Ron Monteperto, who was a DIA analyst and was convicted of passing classified information to two Chinese military attachés who were spies at the Chinese embassy in Washington. So you could see that this is the impact that China had been able to have. And so for the last 20 years, since the China threat came out in 2000, I've been really focusing laser-like on this threat posed by China, looking at all the aspects of it, including communist ideology, which again has been played down tremendously in American policy and academic circles. I remember doing a debate in New York City many years ago. I was with Mike Pillsbury, and we were against Stapleton Roy, who was one of the big China engagement advocates. And one of the people on the pro-China side came up to me after and said that, "I've been doing business in China for 20 years, and I've never met a communist." And I told him, I said, "Well, what you need to do then is to go to the People's Liberation Army Museum in Beijing, where I visited back in the late 90s. And they have statues of Mao, Stalin, Marx, and Engels, which indicates the commitment to the communist ideology that the Chinese communists have, although they don't let it on in public."
It's what they call in intelligence circles, I think, Bill, the technical term for it is a clue. You know, it's your sort of in-your-face evidence of the problem. But this is such an important insight, Bill, and let's pivot into the substance of your work. They call themselves communist. They have a communist party that runs China. The president of the country for life is the head of the Chinese Communist Party. I guess the way they've gotten away with sort of disguising this, or at least obscuring it a little bit, is that the economic system that they operate seems more of a sort of fascistic model than a true communist model. But it does have the unquestioned ideology and sort of control of the Communist Party overall. And Bill, talk a little bit about that as it informs what China is doing these days in terms of its own, you know, people, but more importantly for us, of course, is what they seemingly have in mind for the rest of the world.
Yeah. I also want to mention that earlier this week, the Communist Party of China-affiliated daily newspaper Global Times wrote an article about my book, Deceiving the Sky. And as part of that, they used a very subtle propaganda and disinformation tool where they said that Americans seem to be stuck in the Cold War. That's code for anti-communism, because the Chinese want to very much hide the fact that they are communist. And the reason for this goes back to the Cold War. And I'm steeped in the Cold War. I cut my journalistic teeth covering the Soviet Union and the collapse, its collapse. And I remember back in the Reagan administration, one of the key strategic steps that were taken was to try and cut off advanced technology to the Soviet Union through both the United States and Western Europe. And it was very effective in bringing about the collapse of that evil empire back in December of 1991. The Chinese communists have studied that. They understand very well that by identifying as communists, that this will lead to that kind of sanctions, cut off embargoes and things. So they have focused very much on engagement and pretending not to be communist. And that's been a key part of their strategy. And they've been extremely successful over the past 40 years, to the point where the American economy is very much integrated with China. And this has been the result of unfettered engagement promoted by successive administrations.
Big time. Bill, hold the thought. We have to pause for just a second. We'll be right back with Bill Gertz, the author of Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We are visiting for this full hour with the author of 9 extraordinarily important books about national security, about the nature and threats posed to us by various enemies, and the degree to which we are falling down on the job in addressing those threats accordingly. Bill Gertz is his name. He is also the senior editor of the Washington Free Beacon, a terrific online resource, and the author of the prize-winning column at the Washington Times, Inside the Ring. We're discussing his brand new book, condemned by the Chinese Communist Party, no less, Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy. Bill, again, thank you for your time today. We left off with this terminology that is much fancied by America's elite, academic, media, governing. And its term seems so benign, so, you know, suitable to the kinds of policies that historically the United States has applied to the world, that we want to engage in the world. We want to do business with all comers. We want to have cordial relations. And we're told by these elites that by so doing with China, we would help transform them over time into a rich and, you know, civilized, if you will, member of the international community. How's that actually worked out as you see it, this sort of detente 2.0?
As a policy, two words, utter disaster. I mentioned that the engagement policy of the United States is based on a notion that if we just trade with China, if we're nice to China, that this would have a moderating influence and cause this nuclear-armed communist dictatorship in Beijing to become a normal, non-threatening power. And it has been a total disaster in terms of that policy. I can remember one of the tropes that has been put forth by the pro-China community was by Joe Nye, a former Pentagon official and Harvard academic, who said, if we treat China as an enemy, it will become an enemy. Well, we didn't treat China as an enemy for decades, and it became an enemy. As I see it now, we're really in a new Cold War, and just like the old Cold War, only one side is fighting it, and that's the Chinese. The Chinese view the United States as their main enemy. Their military refuses to do exchanges with the United States in a sincere and honest way, and the Pentagon has invested decades trying to schmooze the Chinese military to build trust. And the Chinese believe that you can't build trust with your enemy. You keep your enemy at arm's length, and that's what they've done. But I could say during the Clinton administration in the late 90s, engagement really accelerated. And it was during this period that the U.S. government decided it was going to do cooperation with China in a couple of areas that turned out to be really damaging to American national security. We decided we were going to do nuclear cooperation, and we sent scientists from our national laboratories to China to talk with the Chinese. And within a very few short years of that, China, through espionage, and the CIA confirmed this publicly, was able to obtain secrets on every single deployed warhead in the U.S. arsenal. Not only did they obtain those secrets, they then built their own small warheads like the W-88 warhead, and they passed that technology and information to the country of Pakistan. And Pakistan, in turn, through its AQ-Khan network, spread this nuclear weapons technology to Iran, North Korea, Syria, and Libya. And we learned about this when Libya decided in 2003 to give up its nuclear program. Among the documents, and this has been kept secret in the U.S. government, among the documents obtained from when Libya dismantled its nuclear program were Chinese language documents on how to make a small warhead for a missile.
And it looked a lot like how we did it. Is that right?
Exactly. It's exactly the same design. It was stolen from the U.S.
Before you move on, just would you remind us of one of the impetuses, or at least one of the elements of this romance, this engagement by the Clinton administration during its time in office, namely political campaign contributions that it was taking from China's operatives?
Yes. There was clearly a bid by the Chinese government to influence the 96 Clinton reelection bid, and it was very successful. It was a covert program. Democrats in Capitol Hill were able to limit the congressional, because they controlled the Senate, they were able to limit the investigation, and it never really went anywhere. But as I mentioned, the second area was space cooperation, and we were helping the Chinese to do space launch, to launch satellites. And as a result of that cooperation, Chinese long-range missiles, which had a bad habit of blowing up on the launch pad, were actually made more reliable as a result of this cooperation. The Chinese were able to illicitly obtain information that was able to be used, and their space launchers, which unbeknownst or either stupidly were not recognized by our space companies, were the same missiles that are used for launching long-range missiles and with nuclear and conventional warheads. Additionally, a multiple satellite launcher was passed illegally to China, and that is now the basis for multiple warheads being deployed on Chinese long-range missiles. I can't think of a worse result of engagement with China than the fact that our nuclear technology was lost to China, spread to the rogue nations of the world, and then China has now developed missiles with multiple warheads aimed at U.S. cities. This is the ultimate disaster of engagement.
Yeah. Well, if it were the full extent of it, Bill, bad as it is, it would be one thing. But as you know, and as you document in Deceiving the Sky, China's also engaged, if I can use that expression, in our foolishness to dismantle much of our industrial base, to engage in, you know, rapacious predatory trade practices that President Trump is trying to address in a deal with them. But this is, you know, a disaster across the broad front, is it not? Some Americans clearly got rich. The Clintons got reelected. And other sort of benefits to small sectors of our national economy perhaps could be identified. But overall, as you say, I think utter disaster is a pretty apt way for discussing what's happened here. Bill, what is the genesis of your title, Deceiving the Sky? Does that have something to do with how they've pulled this all off?
Deceiving the Sky is based on ancient Chinese strategy. Most people are familiar with the ancient strategist Sun Tzu, but Sun Tzu is mostly focused on intelligence. There are other ancient strategists who, and one of in particular came through a book called The 36 Strategies. And it was written, and basically it was written during a period in China's history known as the Warring States Era. And this lasted from about 400 BC to 200 BC. And during the Warring States Era, military strategists tried to figure out ways in which a weaker power could defeat a stronger power. China's leaders today, both military and political, have adopted these ancient strategies. In particular, the first of the 36 strategies is called Deceiving the Sky, to deceive the sky to cross the ocean. And what it basically means is that you, in order to achieve a military victory, you must use deception. And this is something that the American intelligence community has refused to accept. I can remember debates going back 10 or 15 years where they would refuse in their estimates to say that China uses strategic deception and is trying to fool the West about its intentions and goals. But the idea, the story behind Deceiving the Sky is that the emperor was reluctant to follow the advice of one of his military commanders to go to war with one of the neighboring provinces. So the military commander invited the emperor to a dinner at a peasant's house. And they went, and as the emperor stepped into the house, it moved, and he realized he was on a boat headed for this neighboring province to go to war. So the emperor had to decide, does he go back or does he go to war? And he decided that he would go to war. And this means that basically that you have to be willing to deceive the emperor, who in Chinese culture is considered God. So you have to even deceive God in order to achieve your military goals. And this is exactly what the Communist Party of China and its leaders in Beijing are doing toward the United States.
Going back to what you said at the beginning, Bill, of our defense intelligence agency's commanding general going on what the Chinese told him to make analyses of their intentions. And this, you know, more recent series of episodes in which we have refused to acknowledge that deception could be part of their tradecraft, It is unbelievably alarming. And I suspect readers of your book, Deceiving the Sky, are going to be confounded by this malfeasance, I think is the only way to describe it. It cannot possibly be that serious professionals, intelligence professionals no less, are operating with such a lack of seriousness and clarity about the problem. But we're going to come back to that. We have to take a quick brief break. But I want to especially get a sense from you as to some of the other means of unrestricted warfare that are currently being applied against us, in addition to the military buildup and the deception that conceals it, the hide and bide, if you will, of Deng Xiaoping. That and much more with Bill Gertz, the author of Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy, right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. Bill Gertz is in the house virtually. He is spending the full hour with us talking about his extraordinarily important new book, kind of a sequel, if you will, to one that he wrote almost two decades ago. At the time, a path-breaking book as well, The China Threat. The new one is called Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy. Bill, before we start talking about some more of the techniques that the Chinese are using, global supremacy may seem like it's a stretch for a country that, despite the transformation that's taken place there over the two decades since you wrote your first book on the subject, is still, relatively speaking, a third world country in the eyes of many Americans, at least. Is global supremacy actually the goal of Xi Jinping, the Chinese communist dictator for life? And if so, what are the implications of that for us and, for that matter, the rest of the world?
Yes, and it's a very dire situation. As you mentioned earlier, for most of the reform period of the post-Mao era, which was when Deng Xiaoping introduced reform communism, this was, again, built on a major deception that China was only seeking to become a wealthy nation and didn't have global designs. Deng Xiaoping's buzz phrase was, bide our time, build our capabilities. So for up until the 30-plus years between the late 70s, early 80s to around 2012, which was when Xi Jinping, the current Chinese supreme leader, came to power, it was bide our time, build our capabilities. Under Xi Jinping, there has been a major strategic shift on the part of China. They have basically reached the point where they recognize that they have built up their capabilities. They are going forward, and now they're going into expansionism. China believes that it's the middle kingdom between heaven and earth, and that China has been suppressed by other peoples and other nations, and now China is going to take its rightful place around the world as the sole superpower. And as part of that strategy, and the only way that China is going to be able to do that is to diminish and ultimately defeat the United States, which is currently the leading world's superpower. And so China has a model, and they're working on it. Xi Jinping introduced early on in his administration something called the China Dream, which is really the Chinese Communist Party's nightmare, which is basically to spread the Chinese system around the world. And now that they have the economic wherewithal to do this, they've morphed that Chinese dream into something more practical, which they call the Belt and Road Initiative, which is a multi-trillion-dollar investment program in the third world. And it's basically buying up countries. So, for example, the Chinese will go to an undeveloped country and they say, we'd like to build you a railroad. We'll even loan you the money to do it. And then the country finds out that the interest rate is exorbitant, that they can't afford to pay it. And then the Chinese come back and say, well, if you can't pay it, then guess what? That railroad's ours.
Yeah, foreclosure.
They're doing this predatory lending as part of this. And ultimately, their strategy is to encircle the United States by controlling and buying up other countries and imposing the socialist communist system in those countries. Again, and I have a whole section in Deceiving the Sky on China's high-tech totalitarianism, how they're using basically American technology to bring about this kind of repressive, arbitrary, communist-style system.
Bill, this is such an important part of the overall program that you've described in Deceiving the Sky. Just to drill down on it for a moment, you know, President Trump recently talked, I think, in a somewhat offhanded way, maybe it was tweets initially, but it got an enormous amount of pushback when he discussed the idea of buying Greenland. Well, what you're talking about is the Chinese. Well, we're having a conversation about one large island in the north. The Chinese are buying up, as you say, countries around the world and doing it through this sort of, well, I think of it as kind of a payday loan scheme. It's called a debt trap. But the practical effect of it, Bill, has been to not only acquire that kind of infrastructure, but acquire effectively control of critical choke points around the world and places from which to project power, has it not?
Yes. And of course, ultimately, the Chinese want to control that through the economy. They want to replace the dollar-based economy with the yuan-based economy, which is the Chinese currency. So this is, again, this is a real threat. This is not theoretical. Again, because of extensive use of deception, most people in America are not aware of this. I've tried to really make the case for this in Deceiving the Sky. As I say, this is a very, very important book for people to understand what's happening. I do have a whole chapter in the book, and you mentioned the unrestricted warfare, on financial and economic warfare. And I draw very heavily from the work of Roger Robinson, the former Reagan administration official who was instrumental in bringing down the Soviet Union by using financial means. Roger has now focused his efforts on doing similar things to bringing down what is emerging as a communist empire led by China.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to mention that, Bill, as a matter of fact, I'm delighted you did. On Thursday of last week, the Committee on the Present Danger China, which you have been supportive of, has done, I think, one of its most important threat briefings on this subject of Roger Robinson's work and new revelations that not only have we been underwriting through access to our capital markets that various Chinese companies, all of whom are under the control, of course, of the Chinese Communist Party, that sort of fascistic thing I was talking about earlier, Bill, the police state apparatus that is being put in place, not only in China itself, with the credit score, social credit score, as they call it, but as you've indicated, Bill, that's being exported elsewhere around the world and helping, you know, really accomplish the domination, the supremacist China dream agenda that you're warning of here. Talk a little bit about, for example, Bill, if you would, the idea that in addition to our capital markets, our federal retirement thrift savings plan might also be tapped for these kinds of purposes with monies from government employees, past and present, and for that matter, military personnel as well. What's up with that?
Right. Well, you know, right now we're in the midst of what's been termed a trade war. You know, President Trump has been tremendous in bringing about a major strategic shift in U.S. policy towards China, which is manifest primarily in the economic sphere, but it has impacted every other sphere in a very positive direction. And by that, I mean that the military at the Pentagon, in the law enforcement community, in the diplomatic community. But clearly, the Chinese are using finances and the tariffs are beginning to hurt their economy. But as a result of that, the Chinese are using a backdoor method of investing in our capital markets with the idea that having influence over these capital markets, say, for instance, the California pension fund, that is the state pension, if the Chinese are in that fund and controlling that fund, that will be used as leverage against U.S. policy. The people will say, we can't sanction China because our pension funds are tied to the Chinese financial system. And this is the real problem.
A China lobby on steroids.
Yeah, and so this is something that Roger Robinson has been very influential. And again, Roger was instrumental in helping me in deceiving the sky in exposing this in the chapter I have on financial and economic warfare.
Well, I salute you for that, because this is arguably the single most important thing we could be addressing at this moment, because as you say, Bill, it is underwriting this rising threat to our country and to our lives even.
And as part of that chapter, I also go into in-depth about this 1999 book by these two Chinese colonels called Unrestricted Warfare, where this is not a secret. The DIA general certainly should have read that thoroughly before saying that China is not a threat, because Unrestricted Warfare outlines in great detail that China is willing to use all means, actually all means warfare, whether it's financial warfare, which they're doing, economic warfare, even to the point of using terrorists. And again, we've seen some of that where the Chinese have sent sniper rifles to terrorists backed by Iran, which have ended up being used to kill some of our troops in the Middle East.
And electromagnetic pulse and other kinds of asymmetric warfare threats as well. It's really quite a comprehensive blueprint. And I think Kevin Freeman was one of the people who helped us learn about it, Bill, and I know you've worked with him as well. And it if you go through it, most of those we can now point to as, again, not being theoretical, but actual prescriptions for what the Chinese have been doing.
Yeah. And I could say it's a bad news story in the sense that it's very dire. But I think my view is that laying out these problems and identifying the China threat in detail is the first step in presenting real solutions. And in the final chapter of the book, I do present a number of recommendations which are really important, and some of which are already being done.
We're going to come to those in just a moment, Bill. We have to take another short break. But before we do, I did want to ask you to spend just a few minutes with us talking about some of the other things that you've done really incredibly important work in your reporting at the Washington Free Beacon and the Washington Times about, in terms of Chinese influence operations and the failure of the United States really to measure up remotely to the kind of information warfare that the Chinese have been perpetrating for decades. We'll get to all of that and more in our final installment with the great Bill Gertz straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to the fourth and final segment with Bill Gertz in this special edition of Secure Freedom Radio, where we're talking about his new book, Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy. Bill, I did want, before we turn to some of your important recommendations in the book, to give you a chance to just walk us through quickly some of the, I think, most important work you've been doing of late, which is exposing some of the ways in which this unrestricted warfare is being waged against us in the information battle space. And I don't necessarily mean cyber warfare, but that's part of it as well. But talk about the influence operations, the degree to which that China lobby is helping the Chinese perpetrate some of these very serious threats to us.
Well, I have an in-depth look at Chinese influence operations in Deceiving the Sky, and talk about how China is buying up officials. And it's an amazing blended kind of operation that they cross over into the high-tech technology acquisition field, as well as into influencing and diminishing critics of the Chinese communist regime. And it's an amazing story, but I think that the case that I present is really one that is worth looking at. And in the chapter, I highlight the case of Elliot Broidy. Now, Broidy is a financier in Los Angeles. He's under investigation now for influence peddling. And he was involved with a major Chinese-funded operation to seek the return back to China of a dissident billionaire named Guo Wengui. And I outline in detail how this occurred, and it's an amazing story, and it's based on court papers from a Justice Department official who was involved in the case. It's very complex, and I won't go into detail, but suffice it to say that it highlights the extent of Chinese influence. I'd also like to point out that just this week, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo gave a speech to the Motion Picture Association of America. It was a closed-door speech, but I was able to get the notes of that speech. And he urged the movie industry to stop kowtowing to Chinese censorship. It was an amazing thing by the Secretary of State, again, who's been one of the leaders in pressing back against Chinese influence operations. And Pompeo noted there were two films that China has been able to influence. He noted that the remake of the movie Red Dawn, which initially was showed a fictional Soviet invasion of the United States with Cuban troops, and the remake involved Chinese troops invading it. But under pressure from Beijing, which has access to the second largest movie market, the U.S. market is box office is about $11 billion. China is now about $8 billion. They were able to force MGM to remake the entire army of the Chinese into North Koreans. And Pompeo said, look, you can't do this. It's preventing people from telling the truth about China. And again, this is the most important thing that needs to be done on the information front. We need to tell the truth about China because China is steeped in deception and they've deceived the world about their goals and operations.
Bill, one of the other means by which they've done that, and I think what you've said, and hats off to Mike Pompeo for doing so as well, about the popular culture and what they're doing to manipulate perceptions of reality and advance their agenda is very worrying. But going back to what we talked about at the very beginning, Bill, the influence operations being run against our elites is, I would argue, no less worrying. Tell us a little bit about the Confucius Institutes on college campuses and the role that they play in this kind of influence campaign.
Sure. I have a story that ran today in the Washington Free Beacon. This week, the FBI arrested a Chinese official. His name is Zhaoshang Lu, and he is part of something known as the Thousand Talents Program. And this is a program that was involved in recruiting Asian Americans and others with access to high technology and expertise back to China. And as part of this, for the first time, they revealed in the court papers that one of the Confucius Institutes at a university in Massachusetts, I'm sure it was probably either Harvard or MIT, was involved in this visa fraud. So we're beginning to see on the part of the Trump administration a major legal counterattack against Chinese influence and intelligence operations. In Deceiving the Sky, I have an excellent chapter on Chinese intelligence operations, which, again, have been a disaster for the United States. Beginning around 2010, as many as 27 recruited CIA assets in China were arrested, imprisoned, and some of them shot as a result of a Chinese counterintelligence operation against the CIA.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately being greatly exacerbated, as you have done as much as anybody to expose Bill Gertz by the immense Chinese intelligence collection operations in our own country and, of course, elsewhere around the world, including, it said, some substantial number of the 300,000 students that China sends to this country each year. Bill, let me close by just asking you quickly to give us a sense of some of the recommendations that you have propounded in Deceiving the Sky in terms of what we must do to defend ourselves against the China threat.
Yeah, I think the most significant recommendation, and there's probably about 10 or 15 of them, but the most important one is to really, again, tell the truth about China. And in order to do that, we need to declare that China is an adversary and not just a competitor. The Trump administration kind of went halfway, and the reason was because of pressure from the business community and vested interests who are so heavily invested in China to stop short of declaring China a true adversary that they are. And I think that we need to do that as a first step toward developing better policies that, can allow us to impose a strict reciprocity on China, so that when they send their journalists here, quote unquote journalists here, a good percentage of which are intelligence officers, we can start expelling those people. And we can demand that if they send any reporters here, that they must have the same access in China. Same with Chinese media outlets. On most of the cable outlets now, you can get CCTV, which is a propaganda arm of the Chinese government. We should demand a strict reciprocity, that if any Chinese media is here, there should be equal and reciprocal access to the Chinese audience in China. And if they refuse to do that, we should kick them out. I also call for creating a parliament in exile, which is a proposal that was made by the late Konstantin Menges, who is a great conservative Reagan administration official. And we need to set up a parliament of dissidents who can develop policies that can be used for a free and democratic China, and then publish those annually and disseminate them inside China. And that way we can promote democratic reform in China, which is something that the U.S. government should have been doing for the last 30 to 40 years.
Yeah. This idea of working against the Chinese Communist Party seems to me to be central to what's needed in the way of American policy. Bill, it's the leitmotif of what we've been doing with the Committee on the Present Danger, China. And I just wanted to put in plug, in addition for Bill's superb book, the videos particularly that we have generated at the 8 of our CPDC threat briefings, including the most recent one with Roger Robinson and others on the financial underwriting of this Chinese threat, can all be found at presentdangerchina.org. Bill, let me just in closing ask you specifically, speaking to this point about democracy, what should the United States be doing about what's going on in Hong Kong at the moment?
Well, Hong Kong, I was there way back in 2001, and I felt immediately from my experience there that Hong Kong is a democratic dagger pointed at the heart of Beijing. And it's clear to the protests that have been going on for months now that the Hong Kong people are not going to be fooled by the deception of Beijing's one country, two systems ploy. This was the idea that we'll reunite this former British colony, which they did back in 97, with the mainland, but we'll let them keep their democratic system. And slowly and gradually, Beijing is squeezing Hong Kong and forcing that system to become the communist state. And the Hong Kong people are pushing back. The United States needs to support Hong Kong in every way possible.
Amen. Bill Gertz, we have to leave it at that. Keep it up, my friend. I hope you come back to us again soon. I hope we'll be able to see the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.